school. I learned to play a simple game of chess. Jill said he'd teach me more next time. I saw Mr. Huber once. Lisa called him George. She was swimming around when Mr. Huber came out the back door. She called, "Hi, George!" Joe poked me and smiled with half of his mouth. I wondered how he did that. I mean, when he smiles regular, a whole row of teeth shows, but this way only one side of his lip goes up. He must have developed it from watching old gangster movies on TV. Mr. Huber said,
"I don't like the George business, Lisa. That will be enough. Do you hear me?"
Lisa dove under the water and stood on her hands. I watched her wiggle her toes around. I found out that Mr. Huber plays golf twice on Sundays and holidays, once in the morning with the men and once in the afternoon with his wife, and every Sunday night the Huber family eats supper at the country club. So when Joel and Lisa had to get dressed to go out, I went home. My mother put me through the third degree. Questions, questions, questions. She's driving me nuts. She's a lot more interested in the Hubers than she is in my father's new job. I can get her really mad if I want to. When she asks me something, I answer, "I don't know." I've been saying that all weekend. She's about ready to explode. Ralph and Angie were already at the house for supper. I asked Ralph, was he still going to be the world's greatest teacher, and he said, "Sure, kid." But he didn't sound so enthusiastic. All he talked about was my father's electrical cartridges, which is pretty funny for a guy who isn't scientific. The night before school started, me and Joel made arrangements to ride our bikes together every day.
"Your bike is really neat," he told me.
"It's just like yours," I said.
"Yeah, but mine's a year older."
"Well, it's still the same," I said.
"Yeah, I guess so. See you in the morning. 8:15, don't forget," Joel said as he walked home.
I told my mother that me and Joel were going to ride to school together.
"I'm so glad you and Joel made friends," she said. "He's such a nice boy with a face like an angel's."
I don't know what angels really look like, but I doubt if it's like Joel. Lisa, maybe, but not Joel. I'm kind of glad me and Joel aren't in the same homeroom. This way I can get to make some other friends. But there's one thing that bothers me. When you have somebody your age living next door, either you wind up great buddies or you don't talk at all. I'm still not sure how it's going to turn out with us. Junior high isn't as bad as I thought it might be. Once you get used to those bells ringing all the time and going to different rooms for different subjects, it's pretty good. You feel a lot older than sixth grade. Two guys from my homeroom are in all my other classes, Marty Endo and Scott Gold. The three of us stick together. That way, if we have trouble finding the right classrooms, we look stupid as a group instead of three individual stupids. Joel turned up in my English class, which is the period right before lunch. When the bell rang, we went to the cafeteria together. The cafeteria is really neat. Joel brought his lunch from home. He carried it around with him in a brown bag, but he bought his milk and an apple. I bought the whole school lunch. So did Marty Endo and Scott Gold. During the first week of school, I found out why Joel brings his lunch instead of buying it. He likes some strange sandwiches. Salami, tomato, and mayonnaise is his favorite. His second favorite is onion slices on buttered whole wheat bread. Either way, you have to keep a safe distance from him after lunch. I think he enjoys breathing hard after he eats, especially on the girls. One thing I don't like about the cafeteria is the cashiers. They're all ninth graders. You can tell by the way they look and by the way they ignore the seventh graders. To an eighth grader, the cashier might say hi, but to a seventh grader, nothing. Now that's a real shock after being in sixth grade where you're the boss of the whole school. Next year I plan to treat the new seventh graders the same way. I joined the junior youth group at church. It meets every Tuesday night from 7 to 9. You have to be in seventh or eighth grade to belong. Marty Endo joined too, and a skinny girl named Corky from our homeroom. Father Pissarro II stopped in during our first meeting to ask how we were getting along. We all said, "Fine, Father." Then he smiled and left. Our youth group leader is Ted Gibbons. He's a sophomore at Long Island Community College. He's really tall, wears glasses, and it looks like he's growing a mustache. When he wants our attention, he waves his arms around and hollers, "Simmer down!" Since there are 24 of us, it takes a long time to get quiet. Ted told us about some of the things we'll be doing this year. The one I like best is we're going to have our own basketball team. Corky raised her hand and asked if she could start a cheerleaders club to go along with the basketball team. Ted said, "Sure." I think Corky looked at me and smiled then. I didn't smile back. I can't stand skinny girls. All in all, me and Marty Endo agreed that junior youth group seems pretty good. Marty's a nice guy. He reminds me of Frankie, only he's really smart in school. He asked me to go to the movies with him next weekend. He said maybe Scott Gold and Joel can come too. I told him that sounded great. Then I remembered I didn't have any spending money. Mom hands me enough for lunch and Ralph brings me all my school supplies, but there's nothing left for extras. In Jersey City, I used to keep a little of my paper route money so I never had to ask Pop for a handout. That's what got me thinking maybe I should get a paper route in Rosemont. So on Sunday night, I said, I think I'll try to get a new paper route.
What are you talking about?
Mom asked.
You're not getting any paper route.
Why not? I've got a great bike.
That's crazy,
Mom said.
Vic, tell him that's crazy.
Do you miss your old job, Tony? Pop asked. Is that it?
Not exactly, I said, but I could use the money.
Vic, Tony needs an allowance, my mother said. I don't know why I never thought about it.
How much do you need? Pop asked.
Whatever Joel gets,
my mother said.
How much, Tony?
I don't know what he gets, I told her.
Well, find out, she said. You should get the same.
How's 10 bucks? Pop asked.
You mean a week? I said.
Can you manage on that, Tony?
Mom asked. I laughed. Well, yeah, sure, that's plenty.
Good, Pop said. You buy your lunch out of that, but if you need more, you come to me. That's what I'm here for.
Thanks, Pop.
And don't let me hear you talking about a paper route anymore,
my mother added.
Wow, 10 bucks a week. I wonder what Frankie would say.
Every morning when we get to school, me and Joel park our bikes in this huge rack. We all have our own locks and keys. I wear my key around my neck on a silver chain so I won't lose it. To tell the truth, I don't know how I would manage in Rosemont without my 10-speed bike. After school on most days, I shoot baskets while Joel sits on the grass watching me. He has a stack of paperback books he's working on. What he does is underline certain passages and then paperclip those pages so it's easy to find what he's looking for. He showed me a couple of them one day. They're pretty good. Our gym teacher told us if we start to think about those things, we should keep our mind on sports and that will help a lot. He told us about wet dreams, too, only he calls them nocturnal emissions. I'm still not sure if I'll ever have one. When I read Joel's paperbacks, I can feel myself get hard, but other times when I'm not even thinking about anything, it goes up, too. I don't know what to do about that. I mean, if my brain is working right, it's supposed to control my whole body. But if I don't have any control over that part of me, what good is my brain? It's getting so I don't have anything to say about what goes on. I think that part of me has a mind of its own. Suppose it decides to go up in school and everybody notices. Or at a junior youth group meeting, what will I do to get it down? I think from now on I'm going to carry a raincoat with me every day. Then if anything happens, I'll have something to put over me in a hurry. When football season started, me and Joel rode our bikes to the high school field every time there was a home game. Lisa is a cheerleader. She wears red boots and a white sweater with a big R on it. I like the way her hair flops around when she's yelling cheers. Sometimes she talks to us during halftime. It depends on her mood. Other times you'd think we were strangers. One day Lisa really put on the big sister act. She hugged me and Joel together and told the rest of the cheerleaders,
"These are my favorite guys!"
I knew it was a big joke between her and her friends, but I didn't care, because she was touching me and it felt good. Corky goes to every game, too. She hangs around Lisa a lot. Joel told me Lisa is teaching Corky how to be a cheerleader. Corky ought to get Lisa to teach her some other things, too, because Corky looks like a fifth grader. You can't even tell if she's a boy or a girl unless she happens to be wearing a skirt, which is practically never. Her hair is cut short and she's really small. She spends a lot of time giggling. I'll bet Lisa never giggled in her whole life. One afternoon, on the way home from the game, Joel asked me if I'd go to the store with him. He needed some notebook paper. I said, "Sure, Joel." We left our bikes up against the side of the store, and Joel went straight to the counter where the school supplies were. He bought 2 packages of wide-ruled, 3-hole loose-leaf paper. He paid the sales lady and took the bag she gave him.
"I'm done," he said. "You need anything?"
"No, I've got plenty. Ralph brought me a whole bunch of supplies last week."
"Okay, let's go."
We walked side by side to the front of the store. I couldn't believe it when Joel grabbed 3 flashlight batteries from a bin and shoved them into his pockets. I saw him do it. He didn't look at me. He didn't even look back to see if anybody in the store noticed. He just kept walking with that funny lopsided smile on his face. I was sure he was kidding around. But when we got on our bikes and started for home and he didn't say anything, I knew he wasn't kidding. Should I say something? I wondered. Like, I saw you take those batteries, Joel. Who do you think you're fooling? Maybe I should have, but I didn't. We rode home without a word. When we got to my driveway, Joel said,
Why don't you sleep over tonight? That'd be great. I'll show you Lisa's diary and everything. And I've been working on some new books, too, real good ones. I'll even let you read them.
I don't know, Joel, I said very unfriendly.
Come on, Tony.
Maybe, I said. Joel went to his house and I went to mine. I locked myself up in my bathroom for about 30 minutes. My stomach hurt bad. Is taking 3 batteries worse than cheating in arithmetic? Frankie used to cheat in arithmetic all the time in Jersey City. I never reported him. And how about the telephone booth at the Y? We all used to shake it to make change come out. And when it did, I always helped myself like the other guys. Is taking 3 batteries worse than that? Well, what if it is? What am I supposed to do about it? Call the police? I suppose I could. I wouldn't have to give them my name or anything. Or I could tell the man in the store about it. But I don't want to. Really, what I want to do is get a look at Lisa's diary. If I tell Aunt Joel, we'll never be able to be friends. Just when things are looking good and I'm feeling settled, it would be bad news to have to start out all over again. So I told my mother I was going to sleep over at Joel's.
Who invited you?
Mom asked. Joel did.
Is it all right with his mother?
How should I know? Why do I have to get permission for every little thing I do? Isn't it enough to tell her where I'm going? Why does she have to make such a big thing out of it? But she called Mrs. Huber anyway. The last thing I heard her say before she hung up was,
Well, I guess it's okay if just the maid is home. After all, Vic and I are right next door.
I went to Joel's after supper. I got there in time to see his mother and father leave for a dance at the country club and then to see Lisa leave with her date, a senior from Rosemont High who looks like a monkey. I wondered why she was wasting her time on him. I wanted to shout, Hey, Lisa, this guy's a creep! Don't go out with him. Stay home with us. You and Joel can watch TV, and I'll watch you. Please stay, Lisa. But she didn't. She gave the monkey a big smile when he helped her on with her coat. She left without even saying goodbye. Joel and I were on our own. He explained that Millicent was closed up in her room where she has her own TV. Then he checked his watch and said,
I have to make a phone call. Come on.
I followed him upstairs. He said,
I wish I had my own phone like Lisa. Then I wouldn't have to go into my parents' bedroom all the time.
I have never seen a bedroom like Mr. and Mrs. Huber's. They have a round bed. It's hard to believe anybody really sleeps on it. It's 2 steps up from the rest of the room, and I thought if you fall out of bed here, you also fall down the stairs. I started to laugh. Besides the bed being round, there's a lamp hanging over it. If Mr. Huber sits up in bed, does he whack his head on it? Joel jumped up the 2 steps and sat down on the edge of the bed. He examined his fingernails while he waited for someone to answer.
Hello?
He finally said.
Is Denton F. Buchanan in? Oh, I'm sorry, sir. I'll dial again.
I wondered who Denton F. Buchanan was. Joel hung up and tried again.
Hello? May I please speak to Denton F. Buchanan?
What?
Wrong number? The second time?
I'm terribly sorry, sir. He looked up at me and smiled as he dialed again.
Hey, why don't you check the phone book, Joel?
I suggested. He dismissed me with a wave of one hand. He got his number.
Hello? Denton F. Buchanan, please? Yes, I'm sure this is the number he gave me, sir. Yes, well, I do understand. But I have checked with information, sir. Certainly.
I won't make the same mistake again.
Joel, I said, will you look it up? Who is he, anyway?
You'll see, Joel said. This is my last phone call. He dialed. Hello, he said, disguising his voice. He made it sound very deep, which isn't exactly easy the way his voice changes around from high to low all the time.
This is Denton F. Buchanan calling. Have there been any calls for me?
Then he hung up and rolled around on the bed laughing and holding his sides. Isn't that the greatest? That poor guy. He really thought I was serious at first. More laughing and rolling around, now tears running down his face. Who was he? I asked. Who knows? I just made up the number. I always do that. You were fooling around? I asked. You don't know any Denton F. Buchanan? Of course I don't know any Denton F. Buchanan. I don't know any Manfred T. Oliver either. Joel sat up. That's the other name I like to use. You've got to try it. You've got to hear how funny it is at the other end. Now? I asked. I really didn't want to call anybody. I think you can get into big trouble for fooling around on the phone. But if I refuse, Joel will call me chicken. You can't call now, he said. I only make one call a night. The next time you're over, you can try it, okay? Sure, I said. Whew. Now he won't know I'm chicken. Listen, what about Lisa's diary? I didn't want to seem too anxious, but after all, that was the main reason I decided to accept Joel's invitation to spend the night. Oh, yeah, I promised, didn't I? Come on. I followed Joel to the opposite end of the upstairs hallway. Lisa's room is right next to Millicent's. Joel held a finger over his lips as we tiptoed past her door. Inside Lisa's room, Joel snapped on a light and whispered that he's not allowed in there. It's off limits. He shut the door. Lisa's bedroom is all pink and white, girly looking. Her room faces the side of my house. I looked out her window and saw my room across the way. My shades were up. The light from our upstairs hallway made it easy to see everything. I'd have to be a lot more careful about pulling down my shades from now on. I wouldn't want Lisa to be able to see me. I hope she doesn't know that's my room. Psst, give me a hand with this mattress, Joel whispered. She keeps it under here. I held up the mattress while Joel searched, but all he came up with was a note. It said, "Too bad, Snooper. Your sister's smarter than you think." How about that? Joel said. She found out and moved it. Well, never mind. We'll find it. It's got to be in here someplace. He started searching her dresser drawers, then went to her desk, dressing table, and finally to her closet, but he couldn't find it anywhere. I could tell he was embarrassed because he promised he'd show it to me, and now he couldn't make good on his promise. I'm really sorry, he said. Forget it, I told him. I didn't want him to think I cared much. Just as Joel was climbing back down from Lisa's top closet shelf, the door opened. It was Millicent. She looked funny. She was wrapped in a plaid blanket and her hair was up in curlers. What you doing? She asked. Never mind, Joel said. What never mind? I gonna tell on you, Joel. You're not supposed to be in here. This time I gonna tell. Joel shook his finger at her. Will you listen to that? He said to me. Is she a good one? You tell on me, Millicent. You go ahead, then I'll tell on you, Joel shouted. What do you mean? Millicent asked. You know, Joel said. I didn't much like him having a fight with Millicent in front of me. I don't think you're supposed to talk to somebody who works for you like that. Oh, you give me hard time, Joel. But someday, God gonna punish you. You wait. Millicent crossed herself and left. I heard her slam the door to her bedroom. Joel turned out Lisa's light and we went back to his room. How do you know she's not going to tell on you? I asked. She wouldn't dare, Joel laughed. She's scared of me. I caught her trying on my mother's clothes one night. If I tell my mother, she'll lose her job, and she knows it. I'm beginning to change my mind about Joel. He's not the kind of creep I thought he was when I first met him. He might last longer than a week in Jersey City, after all. But the more I know about him, the more I'm not sure I want to be his friend. On October 19th, Angie had a baby girl. My father was disappointed.
A first baby and it's a girl. There hasn't been a girl born first in my family for 5 generations.
So what? My mother said. A girl's just as good. Anyway, I always wanted a daughter. Now I have a granddaughter.
They named the baby Vincenza, after my brother Vinny, just like Grandma planned. But everybody's supposed to call her Vicky for short. Lucky for her, who'd want to go through life with a name like Vincenza? When Angie came home from the hospital, we all went to Queens to visit the new baby. My mother said she was the most beautiful thing she'd ever seen in her whole life. I thought the baby looked like a plucked chicken, but I didn't say so. Grandma stood over Vicky, making funny faces, but all Vicky did was cry. Then the baby nurse, Mrs. Butfield, told us we'd better not stay long because new mothers and new babies shouldn't have too much company right away. She said this like she owned Vicky. Mrs. Butfield is a present from my mother to Angie. My mother wants Angie to rest and not have to get up at night with the baby. Privately, I renamed the nurse, The Butt. She looks about 80, and I know she doesn't want anybody hanging around. Ralph pranced through the apartment with a big box of cigars. He even offered one to me. Go on, kid. Take it. You're an uncle now.
What, are you crazy? My mother yelled at Ralph. He's 13 years old. A cigar? You want him to wind up in the hospital?
My mother didn't have to worry. I wasn't about to smoke one. Cigars stink. All afternoon, I kept thinking, I could be home playing basketball instead of wasting my time in a stuffy apartment in Queens. It's really funny the way everyone is so excited about a baby that looks like a plucked chicken. Maybe Vicky will get better looking. Then again, maybe she won't. Maybe she will always look like that. I feel sorry for her. But why should I worry? She's not my kid, right? When we got ready to go home, I told Ralph and Angie that Vicky is really neat and very pretty, too. That's what everyone else was saying, so I decided to be polite about the whole thing. Sometimes it's better to tell a little lie than to tell the truth and have everybody hate you. When Angie said goodbye, she called me Uncle Tony, and she kissed my cheek. I only let her because she just had a baby. The next Sunday, when Mom and Pop got ready to go to Queens, I said, I'm staying with Joel this afternoon. We might go to the movies. But the Sunday after that, when I tried the same thing, Mom asked,
How do you think Ralph and Angie feel that you don't want to see Vicky? Very bad, I'll tell you that. And you're her only uncle, too.
Oh, all right. I'll go with you today. When we got there, the butt wanted to check my hands before I even saw the baby. Clean hands and runny noses are the big things in Mrs. Butfield's life. I was about to tell her I wasn't interested in touching Vicky and that I was only looking to be polite. But Ralph said he'd had enough of her and her inspections, so the butt packed her bags and left. This made Angie cry for a long time and say she didn't know how she was going to manage all by herself. A week later, my mother started the maid business at home.
I can't run this big house with no help, Vic. I want to enjoy my granddaughter. I don't want to be stuck here all day cleaning the place.
My father was behind his newspaper, and I couldn't tell if he was really listening until he said,
She'll get some help, Carmella.
He spoke without taking his cigar out of his mouth.
You mean it, Vic?
My mother asked.
Of course I mean it. I wouldn't say it if I didn't mean it, would I?
The next day, my mother drove to an employment agency and came home with our first maid. She was from South America. Her name was Gerta, and she spoke only Spanish. I thought about Millicent and wondered if Gerta would teach me to curse in Spanish. After 5 days, my mother whispered to my father,
If I look at her wrong, she cries. I think she's very lonesome. I hope she'll improve with experience.
My father said,
I'm sorry if she's lonesome, but I can't wear my shirts with wrinkles down the front.
I can't tell her, Vic. She'll cry.
Then I'll tell her, my father said.
That was the end of Gerta. The next week, my mother came home with Vera. She was from Haiti and spoke only French. My father said,
Why can't you get one that talks Italian?
My mother said,
Oh, Vic!
But after a few days, my mother complained that Vera didn't like to get up in the mornings, and my father complained about the way the beds were made. That was the end of Vera. Pauline, LaBelle, and Flory followed. Grandma took care of them. Even though she can't talk, she can just look at you and you know what she's thinking. And she wasn't thinking anything good about any of our maids. Then Maxine arrived. You could tell she was different right away. First, because she spoke English. And second, because she interviewed my mother instead of my mother interviewing her. When she saw me, she said, When I wash the floor, nobody walks on it. That includes you. Understand? My mother said,
Tony's a good boy. You won't have any trouble with him.
He'll stay out of my way? Maxine asked. I thought, who'd want to get in your way? My mother put her arm around me.
Of course he'll stay out of your way, won't you, Tony?
Sure, sure, I said. I wonder if she'll try on my mother's clothes, like Millicent. I don't think so. She's about a foot taller than my mother.
Well, Maxine said, running her finger along the furniture, then inspecting it for dirt. I'll try it.
My mother sighed with relief, and later she told us that Maxine has excellent references, and we're going to do everything possible to keep her happy. This included all new towels for Maxine's bathroom, in her favorite colors, purple and brown. On Maxine's third day, she told my mother that she had to be in charge of the kitchen, not the old lady. My mother said,
"Oh, dear. I just don't know about that."
Maxine tapped her foot at my mother.
"You see," my mother explained, "Mama's always done all the cooking."
Maxine glared. My mother tried a nervous smile.
"I suppose we could arrange something. I mean, why should Mama work so hard when she doesn't have to?"
I thought, Grandma's going to be furious when she hears about this. She was furious, all right. She stomped to her room, slammed the door, and refused to come out. My mother banged on her door and called,
"Please, Mama! You'll take it easy for a change. You'll enjoy it. I know you will. Just let me explain."
But Grandma wouldn't open up. Maxine was in charge now, and Grandma knew it. There are times when I'd like to throw something at my mother. How can she let Maxine boss her around? Doesn't she care about Grandma? Can't she see how she's hurt her feelings? The next night, my father brought home a color TV for Grandma's room. Lately, my mother and father seem to think that presents can fix everything, and if you ask me, they think more about Maxine than they do about Grandma. Every night during dinner, my father says,
"Delicious, Maxine!"
Of course, Maxine stands over him until he says it. After our meal, my mother says,
"Thank you very much, Maxine,"
like she's doing us some kind of favor. When Grandma did the cooking, nobody paid much attention to it, and it was better than Maxine's, I'll tell you that. Maybe not as fancy-looking, but better tasting. Since Grandma won't eat anything that Maxine cooks, my mother fixes her meals separately. Usually Grandma gets a broiled lamb chop for supper on a tray in her room. Grandma won't come downstairs anymore. She never even goes to church. One night I walked into the kitchen while Maxine was cleaning up. I saw her throw away all the leftovers.
"Well, Mr. Big Eyes," Maxine said, "what do you want?"
"How come you're throwing all that food away?" I asked.
"Who's going to eat it, do you think?"
I thought in Jersey City we saved everything, including cold spaghetti. I made up my mind right then to study extra hard. The way my mother and father are throwing money around, I figured there won't be anything left by the time I'm ready for college. If I decide to go, I'll need a full scholarship. I bought a small chess set with some of my allowance. Not a fancy one like Joel's, but the pieces are made of wood. I taught my father how to play. Pop's not as tired out as he used to be. Business at the plant is okay, and things are running smooth. Every night after supper, we sit in the den and play a game. Pop says chess is good because it teaches you how to solve problems. He likes it so much he keeps on playing even after I have to go up to my room to do my homework. He has a make-believe opponent he calls Sam. Pop moves the pieces for both of them. Sometimes I think he likes playing with Sam better than me. We were in the middle of a hot game one night when the doorbell rang. It was Father Pissarro II.
"Vic," my mother called. "Look who's here."
Pop stood up.
"Father, what a surprise."
He looked at my mother as if to say, "Did you invite him without telling me?" And my mother looked back at him with a "don't ask me" expression on her face. So I said, "How come you came to see us, Father?"
"Tony," my mother said, "where are your manners?"
Father Pissarro II smiled at me. "That's all right, Tony. I really came to see your grandmother. I've missed her." My mother took a big breath. Then she smiled.
"Oh, Father, that's very nice of you. Mama hasn't been feeling too well."
"I'm sorry to hear that," Father Pissarro said. "Do you think I could see her? I know she'll want to make her confession. She never used to miss a week."
"Well, Father, that's very thoughtful of you," my mother said. "Would you give me a minute to run upstairs and tell Mama you're here?"
"Take your time, Mrs. Miglione," Father Pissarro said. I wondered if Grandma would make a fuss. And how does she confess every week when she can't talk? Does she write it all down or what?
"How's the junior youth group going, Tony?"
Father Pissarro asked.
"I like it a lot," I said. "Ted is really nice."
"How about a drink, Father?"
Pop asked. "No, thank you."
"Coffee or tea?"
my father said.
"It's no trouble."
"Thank you, Mr. Miglione, but I really don't want anything." We looked at each other for a while, and then my mother called from the top of the stairs.
You can come up now, Father. Mama would like to see you.
After she showed Father Pissarro to Grandma's room, my mother came downstairs.
I hope Mama doesn't tell him anything to embarrass us, she whispered to my father.
She has a right to tell him whatever's on her mind, Pop answered.
But you know how stubborn Mama can be these days. She might tell him something just to get back at me.
For what, Carmela? She's not a prisoner here. She can come out of her room any time she feels like it.
Shush, my mother whispered. Here he comes.
That didn't take long, I thought. Did Grandma tell him any family secrets? I studied his face, but I couldn't tell anything from his expression. It was the same as before. Still, I don't think it would be easy to fool Father Pissarro II. After he left, my mother ran up to Grandma's room. She knocked and knocked, but she couldn't get in. Grandma had locked her door again. This morning, before I left for school, my mother said,
I think it's pretty funny that a boy who won't wear rubbers when it's pouring out suddenly carries an old raincoat around with him every day.
I like my raincoat, I said. It's comfortable. I wasn't about to explain the real reason I took it to school.
You have a new jacket, Mom said. I'd like to see you wear it once or twice before it's outgrown.
Maybe I'll wear the jacket tomorrow.
Maybe you'll wear it today.
Mom held the jacket and shook it at me.
Put it on, Tony, and leave that old raincoat home. It doesn't look nice for school. Besides, it's sunny out.
Oh, okay. If I made a big scene, she might get suspicious. So I wore the new jacket to school and worried all day about what might happen, but nothing happened. Maybe it's a question of mind over matter. One Friday in November, right after second period, I met Joel in the boys' room. He was up on the sink singing, There was a girl in our town, her name was Nancy Brown. When he saw me, he yelled, Hey, Tony! Watch this! So I stood there and watched as Joel ran up the row of sinks, then down it. By that time, he had quite an audience, and of course nobody could wash his hands. I wished my mother could have seen the angel. As Joel sang, his voice cracked. Everybody cheered. When the second bell rang, Joel jumped down from the sinks and went to his class. That day at lunch, Joel was in front of me online in the cafeteria. He still buys his milk and apple every day, always the same routine. But this time I saw him take his apple, inspect it for bruises like usual, then stick it into his brown lunch bag. He only paid for his milk. I really got mad when I saw that. After 5 days of watching Joel do this, I wanted to shout at the cashier, Hey, this guy's stealing apples! I'd yank it out of his lunch bag and shove it in the cashier's face. You see? I'd say. You see how stupid you are? Even if you are in ninth grade, he's been doing it for a week, stealing an apple a day for a week, and you haven't even noticed. Then I figured the cashier would look up at me and say, Please tell me what to do. And I'd tell her in this deep voice, Call the principal, stupid! Then the principal would pat me on the back and tell me,
What we need is more young men like you, Mr. Miglione. Honest, brave, unafraid young men.
But Joel would never speak to me again. Marty Endo and Scott Gold would call me snitch. So what did I do about the whole situation? Nothing, as usual. I paid the cashier and carried my tray of meatloaf and mashed potatoes to our regular table. I sat down between Joel and Marty Endo. As I began to eat, I got an awful pain.
Wow, it nearly doubled me over.
What's the matter? Joel asked.
I don't know, I said. I got a pain in my stomach. You want to go to the nurse?
No, I think it's going away. After a few minutes, it disappeared, and I ate some of my lunch, but I didn't enjoy it. The pain came back that night after dinner, and I went to my room to rest. That's when I discovered I could see Lisa's room from my room. I don't know why I never thought of it before. I guess I've been so busy pulling down my shades to make sure she can't see me, it never entered my mind that I could see her. With all my lights turned off and with all her lights turned on, I could see everything she's doing. And what she was doing was getting undressed. I forgot about my pain and concentrated on my window. There was no school on Veterans Day. Just as we were finishing breakfast, Grandma walked into the kitchen. She was dressed in black. All three of us stopped eating. This was the first time she'd come out of her room since Maxine started running things. Grandma handed my mother a note. First, my mother read it to herself. Then she jumped up and hugged Grandma.
Oh, Mama, you remembered!
My mother read us the note. I'm ready to go to the cemetery. I thought we wouldn't go this year. Somehow I figured that we've changed so much since coming to Rosemont, we'd be able to skip the cemetery deal. But no, we were going. We go every year on Veterans Day, to bring flowers to Vinny's grave. He's buried in Perth Amboy, which wasn't a bad trip from Jersey City. From Rosemont, it takes forever. We were all squeezed into the car. Me, my mother, and my father in the front. Grandma, Ralph, Angie, and the baby in the back. My mother kept turning around to talk to Ralph and Angie.
If only Vinny could see her. He'd be so proud. If only he knew he had such an adorable little niece.
My mother sniffled, and I knew what was coming. Every year she devotes the whole day to talking and crying and saying if only about Vinny. I always feel like an outsider on Veterans Day. On the way to Perth Amboy, Angie had to feed the baby. Halfway through her bottle, Vicky spit up and landed on Ralph. So Ralph passed Vicky to Grandma while Angie tried to clean off his jacket. After Vicky finished her bottle, she started to cry. My mother said she must have gas. So Grandma passed Vicky to my mother in the front seat so she could try to burp her. When Vicky cries, her face turns bright red, and she looks like she's going to explode. Finally, Angie handed my mother a pacifier for Vicky to suck. Oh, I'm glad we don't have a baby at home. 2 hours in the car is enough. When we got to Perth Amboy, my father tried to find the same florist as last year. My mother argued with him about that.
What's the difference? One florist is as good as another.
But my father said, I remember him. He was a nice guy. He went out of his way to be nice.
So you'll waste the whole day looking for him,
my mother snapped. This went on for 20 minutes. Finally, my father found the florist he was looking for. We all got out of the car to stretch our legs. My mother and Angie talked on and on about what kind of flowers to buy this year. Grandma kept pointing to yellow chrysanthemums, but my mother said they reminded her of football games and that she preferred something all white in a graveyard container. We piled back into the car with me holding this huge arrangement of flowers. Last year it was only a third as big. When we got to the cemetery, I carried the flowers to Vinny's grave and stuck the container into the ground. I stepped back and brushed off my hands. My mother bent down and sort of fluffed out the flowers. Then she cried.
Oh, Vinny, Vinny, I miss you so much, she said.
She covered her face with her hands. Grandma kneeled and kissed the grave. She does that every year. It makes me feel awful. I hate it. Why can't I feel the way they do? Why can't I remember things about Vinny and cry, too? My father just stared at the grave and rocked back and forth on his feet. Angie held the baby close and whispered to her. She's telling Vicky about Vinny, I thought. And about how he died for his country and all that. About how brave he was and how he understood everything my father did in the basement in Jersey City. Does Vinny know about us now? Does he know that we live in a big white house and that we drove here in a new green hardtop instead of the old truck? Does he know that Grandma has her own color TV because she's not allowed to cook anymore? Does he know about our boss, Maxine? And if he knows, what does he think? Is he laughing at us? Is he laughing and saying, hey, what happened to you guys since you visited me last year? Ted Gibbons organized our junior youth group basketball team. He said anybody who wants to play can play. He told us he remembers what it's like to try out for a team and not make it, so we wound up having two teams. Only two guys in our youth group didn't want to play, and one of them agreed to be Ted's assistant coach, and the other one said he'd like to be our sports reporter. Ted meets with us every Friday afternoon at our junior high. We don't have any after-school activities on Friday, so Ted got permission from the principal for us to use the gym. Ted's mustache is getting thicker. He touches it a lot as if he's checking to make sure it's still there. He's worked out a whole schedule of games for us. We're going to play every Friday night during January and February, 8 games in all against teams from other churches and temples. Since we have two teams, Ted said we'll alternate and change over at every halftime. That way we'll all have a chance to play. We started our practice right before Thanksgiving. I'm the best foul shooter, and I'm fast, too. I think Ted is pretty impressed. I just wish I was taller, because when somebody like Marty Endo guards me, I can't shoot at all. I can't even see. When I'm playing basketball, I don't think of anything else. Not Lisa or schoolwork or my family. I concentrate on the ball and getting it into the basket. Basketball makes me feel good. I wish we didn't have two teams. I wish I could be in there all the time. The whole family was invited for Thanksgiving. My three aunts and uncles and my cousin Ginger from Weehawken. Ginger belongs to my mother's sister Rosemary. We call her Aunt Rose. Aunt Rose is married to Uncle Lou. Uncle Lou's Jewish, and my mother doesn't approve of him. It has nothing to do with being Jewish, she says. It's just that he isn't right for Aunt Rose, which is pretty funny because they've been married for 15 years. This was the family's first visit to Rosemont, and my mother was really doing it up big. She hired another lady to help Maxine in the kitchen, so Maxine wouldn't get all tired out, what with cooking the turkey and all. Grandma refused to join us. She hasn't left her room since Veterans Day. My mother begged.
Please, Mama, just this once. It's Thanksgiving. Give me some pleasure, Mama. Get dressed and come downstairs. Mama, will you please turn off that television set and come down for dinner?
But Grandma wouldn't budge. Angie brought Vicky in a car bed. She was supposed to sleep in it all afternoon, but nobody told her that because she screamed a lot. So we played past the baby. All my aunts and uncles got to hold her and make silly faces at her, until my mother came up with the brilliant solution of leaving Vicky upstairs with Grandma while we ate. Angie took the baby to Grandma's room, and then even if she was screaming, we couldn't hear her. A very important thing to remember about babies is that if you can't hear them, they're not so bad. My relatives were really impressed with Rosemont and our house. Uncle Lou kept telling Ginger,
"Now you can say you have rich relatives, baby. Really rich relatives."
And Aunt Rose said,
"When Ginger gets older, Tony can fix her up on dates and she can sleep over here." "Oh, can I, Aunt Carmella?"
Ginger asked. My mother nodded and smiled. I thought, "I'll never fix you up, Ginger, because you're dumb and ugly, and I don't like you anyway." Uncle Lou said,
"Rose thinks of everything, doesn't she? Why should Ginger go out with a poor boy if she can go out with a rich one, right?"
So I said, "What's so great about being rich? Money isn't everything, you know." They all laughed. Even Ralph and Angie laughed. Ralph said,
"Listen, big shot. Wait until you have to pay for baby shoes."
How does he know so much about baby shoes, I wondered. Vicky doesn't even wear shoes yet. Ralph is different lately. He isn't the wizard anymore. He's just an old guy with a wife and kid. Would he be like this if we were still in Jersey City? Is it being a father that changed him? Finally, we sat down to dinner. I've never eaten so much in my life. For dessert, we had a choice of three pies, pumpkin apple or lemon meringue. I chose lemon meringue because I knew Angie baked it and Maxine baked the other two. After dinner, the family went upstairs one at a time to visit with Grandma. When Aunt Rose came downstairs, she said,
"Mama's lucky to be able to spend her last years in such luxury. And with her own color TV,"
Ginger said. Later, they all decided the reason Grandma took to her room was plain old age. I could have told them the truth, but I'd have gotten in a lot of trouble. My father offered Ralph and my uncle cigars. He laughed as he told them each one cost $1. When they all lit up, Aunt Rose asked Ginger to recite for us. Ginger's been doing that ever since I can remember. You'd think by now she'd know how dumb she sounds. You'd think she'd be too embarrassed to stand up in front of a bunch of relatives and say her stupid poems. But no, she jumped right up and started. She had some new poems this year, two about Thanksgiving, naturally, and one about love by Elizabeth Barrett Browning. When she recited that one, she closed her eyes. How I wished Joel could have heard her. When Ginger was through, I heard Aunt Rose telling my mother that Ginger wears a bra already, which reminded me of Lisa. Soon it will be dark outside, and I'll be able to watch her from my window. When I feel my neck turn red hot, I know I better think about basketball in a hurry. Corky's real name is Catherine Thomas. I found out because a girl in my homeroom named Marion passed me a note. It said, "KT thinks TM is super." I knew who TM was, me, but I didn't know who KT was, and I really didn't care. So I crumpled up the note and threw it away. I made a disgusted face at Marion. That afternoon, I got another note. This one said, "My real name is Catherine Thomas. Love, Corky." I crumpled up that note, too. I wished she'd leave me alone. She's a real pain. Ever since that day, Marion runs over to me every morning and says,
"Hi, Tony. How's Corky?"
Corky is always stationed right near us, so she doesn't miss a thing. I answer Marion with a straight face. "I don't know," I say. "Why don't you ask her yourself?" Then Corky and Marion giggle like crazy until Mrs. O'Leary looks up and tells them to settle down. Marty Endo told me that Corky offered to do his math homework for a week if he arranged for me to wind up sitting next to her at our junior youth group meetings. Marty wouldn't do it. Why should he? He's great at math. The more Corky bothers me, the more I think about Lisa. I wish it was Lisa who passed me notes and wanted to sit next to me. This morning in math class, I wasn't thinking about Lisa. I was concentrating on a problem in my book. When I got the answer, I raised my hand and Miss Tobin called on me. She asked me to go up to the board and show the class how I worked it out. Just as I finished writing the figures on the board, I started to get hard. Mind over matter. Mind over matter, I told myself. But still it went up. I kept my back to the class and prayed for it to go down. Miss Tobin said,
"That's an interesting way to solve the problem, Tony."
For a minute I thought she meant my real problem, but then I realized she was talking about the math problem.
"Could you explain your reasoning to the class, Tony?"
I started talking, but I didn't turn around. I could just picture facing the class. Everybody would laugh and point to my pants. I wished I was wearing my raincoat.
"We'd hear better if you turn around," Miss Tobin said.
What could I do? Pretend to be sick and run out of the room? Maybe. Or just refuse to turn around? No. Ask to go to the bathroom? No.
"Tony,"
Miss Tobin said.
"Yes?"
"We're waiting for you to explain the problem."
"Oh, okay, Miss Tobin."
I was holding my math book in my left hand and a piece of chalk in my right. I turned sideways, keeping my book